order the House Committee on Environment and Water and open a public hearing on House Bill 2185. Committee, we will be reviewing this bill today. We're still waiting on a revenue statement. We have a fiscal but not a revenue statement, so it may not be possible to actually work this bill today, but we'll give a good public hearing and see what we find out. Let's begin with the department. Is it Christine? Are you going to introduce the bill to us? Great. Come on up. When you're ready.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Nina DeConcini, and I'm the Northwest Region Division Administrator for the Department of Environmental Quality. The Northwest Region, which I oversee, has responsibility for DEQ's 401 Water Quality Certification Program. To my right is Christine Svetkovich, who is DEQ's Water Quality Legislative Coordinator. I sincerely appreciate your time today, and we are pleased to be here before you. I'm going to provide an overview of House Bill 2185, which DEQ is proposing regarding the 401 program. But before I discuss the specifics of the bill, I'd like to give you a quick overview and some context and why the work is important not only to protect Oregon's waterways, but also give applicants the certainty they need to achieve their economic development objectives. Under Section 401 of the Federal Clean Water Act, any federal license or permit to conduct an activity that results in a discharge to waters of the United States must get a water quality certification. And in Oregon, DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality, is responsible for assuring that all these projects that get a certification meet water quality standards as approved by DEQ's governing body, the Environmental Quality Commission, and they need to also be approved by the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA. The program that we're here to discuss this afternoon is the in-water work. In other words, the removal fill projects. Sometimes they're referred to as removal fill, and that's different from the hydroelectric dam relicensing, which is also part of the same section. So for the purposes of today's discussion, it has to do with removal fill and in-water work, where there's discharge to waters of the state. We issue about 100 certifications annually for federal actions, and these include things like dredging, filling wetlands for development, decommissioning of dams, transportation projects, and a variety of restoration projects for wetlands and stream restoration. These proposals typically come to us through the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and there are a number of other agencies that may also have permit requirements that include the Department of Land Conservation and Development, the Department of State Lands, and Oregon's Department of Fish and Wildlife. And while we're primarily interested in making sure that the water quality is protected, we want to work with these agencies to streamline and deliver better government. In doing so, we want to make certain that everybody understands what DEQ's expectations are and what requirements need to be in place for the certifications to be issued. The size and the complexity of these projects vary widely. You can have one small project to fill a private driveway to a huge development that fills many, many acres. And this includes flood mitigation as well. Again, we're concerned with water quality and protection of standards, but we try to work collaboratively not only with the applicants but with the other agencies so that they know what to do and they can achieve their project goals with still being protective of the environment. So a little bit of history. In 07-09, during the session, we were given permission by the legislature to increase fees across the board 35%. And we began meeting with a stakeholder advisory group of the affected parties and applicants to discuss how we were going to implement that fee in late 2007. Well, our advisory committee was not enamored with that 35% fee increase and told us so. One of the main reasons was because there are statutory exemptions for certain applicants and categories of projects. 52% of the projects pay no fee. So I want to just make sure that's clear. 52% pay no fee currently. And The way that we calculate the fee now is based on the amount of removal or fill, not the actual workload associated with the project and our review of whether the certification is going to be needed. Good afternoon, Representative Boone. In addition, the 2007 approved fee increase would have fully funded the two staff currently in the program and would have added two part-time positions. And I'm going to speak more about that in just a moment. Our advisory committee recommended that DEQ develop an equitable fee structure based on the amount of work associated with the projects, not the removal or fill amount. And they wanted to make sure that we had the adequate staff so that the technical work could be performed in a timely way, so the applicants had certainty. The exempt categories, the 52% I just spoke of, include gravel mining, projects that remove less than 500 cubic yards of material, and projects that are less than 2 acres in size. Other projects that pay a fee through the Department of Geology and Minerals, DOGAMI, for surface mining are also exempt. And I just want to give you a quick example of one of these exempt categories. In January of 2008, we began tracking the time we were spending on these projects just so that we could be here today and provide you with sort of an accurate picture of what kind of time is being invested. For the gravel mining projects alone, we have spent approximately 300 hours from January 08 to January 09, and none of these projects DEQ received any compensation for. So that's just one example. Based on the feedback from the advisory committee, DEQ decided the 401 program would forego the approved 35% fee increase we got permission for in the 07 session and focus instead on a new fee schedule and associated policy package to achieve a sustainably funded 401 program. We updated the legislature during June of 2008 through the emergency board about the change in our direction, that we weren't going to go with the 35%, but we were instead going to restructure and come back to this session. That's why we're here today. Our existing staff is not adequate to run a statewide program. And despite the economic downturn, we are actually not seeing a drop in 401 applications, and this compares sharply to our other programs where fees are associated and they're directly connected to development, like asbestos, our heating oil tanks decommissioning program, and our on-site septic system program. As I mentioned, the size of the project doesn't necessarily equate to the workload associated with evaluating whether or not a certification will be issued. For example, an applicant could be very savvy and very aware and knowledgeable about the regulatory process and know what paperwork to file, but the project could be very large and that may not require a significant workload. But some applicants, even with small projects, may be very unfamiliar with the regulatory process and will require more technical assistance from DEQ, and that's something we want to provide. With input from the advisory committee, we developed a proposal to remove these existing statutory exemptions regarding the amount of removal and fill for the water quality certification. And the removal of the exemptions is at the top of Section 1 in this bill. If House Bill 2185 is approved, this means that all 401 applications will pay a base fee. The bill also includes a new proposed fee structure for the 401 program. The new fees are in Section 1 in paren A through F of the bill. As we said, the fee is not based on the amount of removal or fill. It's based on the amount of work, so there'll be a base fee for all applicants, and then an additional fee in a tiered approach based on what DEQ believes will be required to actually perform the evaluation to decide whether the certification can be issued or not. Section 1, parentheses 2, of the bill outlines how DEQ will decide what tier each application will fall into and what the subsequent fees will be. And Section 1, parentheses 3, of the bill will allow the Environmental Quality Commission, that's our governing body, DEQ's commission, to change the fee schedule after January 1st, 2012. So the new fee schedule will do three things primarily. Number one, it'll fully fund existing staff. Two, it will restore two positions approved by the 2007 legislature. And number three, it will add two new positions, and I'll talk about those in a little more detail in just a moment. In accordance with DEQ's performance management system, any new staff and all existing staff are held to a rigorous standard for meeting timelines, for measuring their work, and what they need to do, and the 401 program will be no different. One of the new positions we propose to locate in DEQ's western region, because approximately 55% of the projects are actually located there, and we think that will provide applicants a little more proximity and technical assistance closer to where the projects are occurring. The other fees will be used to develop much-needed database work to allow applicants to track what's going on with their project. We'd like to be able to develop more robust web-based materials and guidance documents that will give applicants more information sooner in the process. And this is something that we've done with our stormwater guidance, which has been very well received, but we know we need to do more. Policy Package 127 in the governor's recommended budget is associated with this bill. The advisory committee stressed the importance of providing more certainty to the applicants, both in terms of how long it's going to take for DEQ to make the evaluation of whether they get a certification, as well as how much money it's going to take. And we completely agree that that's the way the fee structure should be arranged. The approval of this package will give not only Oregonians and the environment certainty in terms of timeliness of projects, and how long they'll take and how much money they'll have to pay. Hopefully it will increase the applicant's knowledge of 401. That's something we're committed to through the web, through these guidance documents we need to develop, through our database work that needs to be there for applicants so they know what to do and have multiple avenues to get information from DEQ about the program. We know that efficiency and customer service is important, and putting a new person in Western Region will also provide that. Currently, there is an interest in pre-application meetings. That's where an applicant might want to meet with DEQ ahead of time. Hey, I know I might need a 401. There's going to be a discharge here. Can you help us? Tell us what we need to do. That's something we're not able to do now with the resources, and we think that would be something that we'd like to do. We talked a little bit about the other permitting processes through DSL, DLCD, the Army Corps of Engineers, and I hope it's okay that I define those acronyms first and I can use the shorthand now. And we want to try to streamline as much as possible so that the applicant gets the best and most efficient service from government that they can. Currently, we aren't able to do any compliance monitoring and or enforcement, and this is really important not only because everybody needs to be treated fairly and equally in the process, but we also want a level playing field so that those that are implementing best management practices, for example, in their project, that they're not held to a different standard than someone else who we may not be able to evaluate. And finally, as many of you have seen from the recent news reports about the stimulus package, we want to be prepared to respond to what we suspect will be applications coming in that will need a 401 application. And so we believe that that's an important benefit from passage of this bill. We hope that that the bill will be passed and the associated policy package that accompanies it. We believe we need the resources to not only protect water quality and make scientifically credible decisions about water quality, but to also provide applicants with the certainty that they deserve and need in order to achieve their economic objectives. So with that, I just want to thank you again for your time this afternoon, and Christine and I are here to answer questions.
Nina, thanks very much for your testimony. Let me see if I've got this straight. The 2007 legislature authorized a fee increase for you. You met with stakeholders, decided you would rather forego the fee increase in 2007-2009 biennium, improve the fee, make the fee fairer, and come back to the 2009 legislature for an authorization of this sort of new and improved 401 fee.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, that is exactly correct.
Very good. Are there questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bentz and then Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Having practiced law for many years and negotiated many fees with many clients, I've had occasion to justify that which I was going to do over and over and over again. I had a group of folks that were kind of a true-up. That would be all my competitors. That's not the case with the DEQ, and so the estimated approach to these fees is one that if I was asking for a permit, I would be concerned about. we need a device that would allow someone who's upset by the estimate or by the time it takes to conclude your project that they can then go to if they're unhappy. Mm-hmm. In as we shift to, apparently away from a method of paying with general fund monies for DEQ services to a fee-for-service arrangement, there has to be, in my opinion, a more accountability format or much more accountable arrangement. And I don't see that here.
Okay.
So if someone is upset with your department because, A, the estimate was too high, and, B, the project took too long, what can they do about it?
Chair Cannon, Representative Benz, I would say that as the proposal goes back to the applicant, if they can actually work with us, I mean, that's one way that they can get some redress. It's not an independent body, but if they feel that what we've estimated is too high, we're certainly willing to say, well, let's review the public involvement component of this, which might be something that the applicant doesn't believe is necessary, but we have many environmental organizations, let's say, that have been very interested in a particular discharge, if that makes sense. I'm seeing a puzzled look, so I want to make sure I explain that correctly. So one avenue of redress is directly with DEQ. If an applicant says, hey, you know, this doesn't add up for us, we don't think it should take this much time, that's something that we can talk about, and that's something we're committed to doing. There currently is not, as you suggest, an independent entity or body that an applicant could go to say, we don't agree, at least that I'm aware of. Does that make sense? But I would want to assure you that we will not make the decision arbitrarily, number one, and number two, we would take time to explain why we feel the workload warrants the fee and would explain and take that time and respectfully explain it to the applicant, which I know doesn't directly answer your question, but that one of the things we discussed with our advisory committee was, well, what if you make an estimate and then for a tier one or a tier two, and then in as you get into it, you determine that it isn't going to require that much money. It's not going to, the fee isn't going to be that expensive. We certainly would be willing to go back to the applicant and say, this isn't going to require that, and therefore, you know, we might be able to lower the fee. Consequently, it would be, or conversely, if we feel like, wow, there's going to be a lot more interest in this, it's going to require significantly more time, we'd have to talk to the applicant about revising that fee upwards. But we are very sensitive to that, and I don't have an answer for you about an independent arbiter of whether an applicant is upset with the amount of the fee. I'm sorry.
Follow up. Thank you for that answer. I understand the difficulty and the challenge. And so I am just curious if there are peer review organizations or other states that establish fees for similar work. The concern I have is that I don't know what the link is between the fee that's been established for the type of work, the hourly rate, or where the money goes that's earned, quote, unquote, by those who are doing the work.
Okay.
And thus, if we're trying to figure out a standard that's going to apply to that which you're charging, I haven't seen it. And so somehow, I kind of need to hear from you today that the rules will clearly reflect the standards upon which the fees are going to be built and the type of rules, I guess, that the agency will be held accountable to if someone is highly upset about the quality of the permit or the job, the time it took. Is that what you plan on doing in those rules?
Chair Cannon, Representative Benz, would it help if, and I think this is something we could do maybe in a hypothetical, if we had a particular application, because we got plenty of history, you know, in this program, we actually did that for the stakeholder and advisory committee members. They asked, well, what would this dredging project result in? Okay, I've had, or this gravel extraction project, would you give me an idea of where this would all fall? And so what we did was we tried to determine exactly the level of complexity, for one thing, because somebody who is very well versed in, let's say, what the Endangered Species Act nexus might be for a particular project, or the total maximum daily load, another water quality requirement that might be part of the evaluation. That'll be a heck of a lot more expensive because it takes more time and maybe a higher level of technical expertise to make that determination compared to, let's say, a restoration project that is very small and probably isn't going to result in significant sediment disturbance, for example. So if that would help, we could probably provide some examples of where some of these projects would fall, the types of evaluation, and the kinds of staff-level expertise that would be required to give you some more comfort with it. Does that not answer your question?
Mr. Chair, a follow-up.
Yeah.
I understand it pretty well, having gone through many of these things at many different levels. So, what I'm asking is, will your rules establish the standards by which you will live? That's my question. Will DEQ's rules that you're going to issue as a result of this law establish the standards that folks can rely upon when it comes to the amount you are charging?
Chair Cannon, Representative Bence, yes, I believe the tiers actually do that, because it explains exactly kind of what types of activities will be associated with what type of application. So it'll be very clear to the applicant exactly the kind of work that's going to need to be done for us to make a determination for the certification, whether we deny or whether we approve. So I believe that the tiers do that, if that makes sense. I actually think there are some pretty good safeguards there.
Thank you.
Representative Boone.
Nina, hi.
Representative Boone. Nice to see you.
And Christine again, 10 minutes later, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. I have never heard of fees based on hourly work.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my question. Is this commonly done in any other agency currently, or in your agency in another area?
Chair Cannon, Representative Boone. I don't know I don't think we have any fees based on hourly work, but I think there are some, certainly our air quality rules take into consideration the complexity of a permit, for example, and let's say a permit requires a certain level of public involvement, a certain level of testing and monitoring, that will result in a more expensive permit. So while it may not be hourly, it is workload based, which is exactly what we're trying to get away from in the way the current fee structure is arranged. Does that make sense?
No, because I'm not clear on not clear on exactly what the current structure is that you're moving away from.
Okay, so Chair Cannon, Representative Boone, I'll review it briefly. Currently, people pay based on the amount of fill or their removal. So it's based on cubic yards. You either fill the wetland or you're removing it. And that can be a really small project that may not take a whole lot of time, or it could be a project that takes a ton of time. These gravel projects, 300 hours, we didn't get a penny for those. And so that's a really good example of, that's just the statutory exemption that we're trying to address in this new fee rule, the more equitable fee that we've proposed. But the workload analysis, and that's, I think it gets to the fairness and equity question that Representative Bence is asking, like how can we be sure, how can you as a legislative body be sure that DEQ as an agency is going to rigorously apply the fairness quotient of, you know, just willy-nilly. That's why we've tried to identify, hey, if it's this tier, you're dredging, and it's the Columbia River, that's a lot different than, you know, another smaller water body, for example, and there's probably going to be a lot more interest. Therefore, we're probably going to have to do, you know, more evaluation. So I think that while there may not be an hourly equivalent within DEQ, I think there are examples that are similar that are workload-based as opposed to just, you know, amount of material removed. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Other questions?
Yeah.
Representative Smith.
The one, it's only a sliver of a response, but I think that in another room, Ways and Means Subcommittee for reviewing for general government, I think we do some time-based charges, agency to agency, DAS charging other agency. I think that's right.
That's true.
Because I think they told me about that like last week, and I was not sleeping. I just wanted to say there have been, speaking largely to the committee, significant questions about, and I think still facing us and facing this committee, regarding the degree to which this legislature should grant rulemaking authority and the ambit over which that rulemaking authority should cover versus how much authority we should preserve. I guess we always preserve it, but fail to grant, refuse to grant. And I just want to say for the record that saying two things. One, having an instance in which you are given the authority not only to make decisions but even to get money, and then opted not to based on stakeholder input, is gives me at least some modicum of confidence and is very interesting to me. And second, perhaps, you know, the stakeholder advisory group could be one tool such as was Representative Barnhart's suggestion for sunsetting, et cetera, as we start thinking about the new word I'm learning, sideboards, around whatever grants of authority we offer. So I wanted to say that to our collective memories and the record.
Other questions?
Chair Cannon, can I respond to, or just
Nina,
make a statement in response to Representative Smith? Yes, and we took what they said seriously. I mean, there was clearly not support for it, and we could have proceeded because we had the authority, as you just suggested.
Oh.
And I also want to be honest. We don't have unanimous support for this from the stakeholder group. I mean, I want to be very clear about that. But we did listen. We responded by looking at these tiers. We probably did two or three passes, if I'm not mistaken, at different ways we could, you know, skin the cat on this. So it's taken a long time, but we think we have a better product as a result.
When it comes to the grant of authority that Representative Smith is talking about, this actually looks like, I mean, you've proposed legislation that would set your fee in statute, which was not the case under, or is not the case currently for this program.
Chair Cannon, yes.
By rule.
That's correct.
Why did you decide to come to the legislature? I guess you needed new authority.
Right.
Why did you decide to spell that out, you know, $4,925 for between 20 and 75 hours, versus maybe a approaching it the same way you did in 2007, giving you the fee authority and then the assumption being you'd work through that by rule?
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, I'm going to ask Christine to reply to that.
Chair Cannon, you're correct that we did have to come back to the legislature to get approval to remove the exemption.
Yes. Christine, could you identify yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, I'm Christine Svetkovich with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. So we would need that approval anyway, the clarification and the change of statutes. The other thing is, right now, this program is very small. We have two staff people statewide to do this work, and rulemaking takes a long time and a lot of energy, and it's a lot faster for us to put these in statute and to start implementing the new fees than to go through the entire rulemaking process. And so we thought it was a better use of staff resources to work on this legislative proposal once, as opposed to working on the legislative proposal and then going through the rulemaking, which would be another year.
I see. Okay. And that raised another question, which is what, and I think you've touched on it before, but what the fees are used for. When you said you have only two people working on it statewide,
right,
this looks a little high just for two FTE, if we're looking at, well, $809,000 for the biennium. Is this just does this just fund the positions, or is there additional activities that are associated with these fees?
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, it is primarily in FTE, but the guidance documents, the database, and the web-related stuff, which is, of course, FTE because
right,
people have to do the
right
work, are also areas we'd like to make sure that the money goes to.
Okay. Okay. So it's essentially the two FTE and the work associated with them.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Do you want to add something?
One clarification, Chair Cannon. It's also to increase the program by another 3.5 FTE, actually. Is that right? Excuse me, 2.5 FTE. So we got one FTE less approved by the legislature last session, which we could not fill those spots because we didn't have the revenue to pay them because we didn't do the fee increase. And in addition, we're proposing to increase the program by another 1.5 FTE. So in total, it would cover 4.5 FTE. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and maybe I'll take a look at your budget.
Okay, it'd probably be clearer
where it's in a little bit more detail. That would be helpful to see those numbers. Representative Benson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I want to preface my remark by saying again that, in general, I am in favor of people having to pay for the work that they have an agency do. The reason that this bill causes me concern is because I'm very familiar with setting fees. And am I correct in understanding here that what's happening, the first example of 20 hours, it's really a minimum fee schedule of $1,400, even though it may only take the agency 1 hour. And thus what's happening is there's a shift of the cost of the program to this group of folks that previously were not in the program. They were exempt. And so what we're doing, and I want to make sure I understand it correctly here.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm wrong, call me out.
Sure.
It appears that what we're doing is putting a minimum fee schedule in place for a fixed number of hours that you don't have to put in. You have to put in up to, let's go to the second category, you'd have to put in 20 hours, for which the department would get $4,900. You might work all the way up to 75, you might not. You might put in 21 hours. You'd still get $4,925.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right?
Chair Cannon, Representative Benz, yes, you've interpreted that correctly.
And the folks that are paying this include a larger group of folks that previously paid nothing.
Chair Cannon, Representative Benz, yes, that is also correct.
And so the purpose of your coming before us today is to ask first for a minimum fee schedule that I just described,
mm-hmm.
and secondly, to include a much larger group of folks, at least 52%, that never paid anything before.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay,
and Chair Cannon, Representative Benz, the other thing I would offer is there is an administrative workload associated with just keeping track of the applications, where they are in the queue, even with this minimal staff we have, that we just need some ability to make sure that we know kind of who's in order, too. And that's part of this, that base fee that, and I don't know, Christine, you want to add anything to that, but that's another component of it.
Thank you. Are there any other questions before we move on? Representative Gillian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the answer to what the stakeholders object to, you mentioned you wanted to be honest that
yeah,
they weren't.
Absolutely.
Is the answer in your answer to Representative Benz just now? In other words, say more about the resistance or the
uh-huh.
reaction, if you would.
Sure. Chair Cannon, Representative Gilliam, I think I would qualify what I'm about to say by saying that much of this is economically driven. I mean, fees in general are just... Most people aren't happy campers to pay fees right now, and I think all of you know that in the positions you're in representing your constituents of all, walks of life, individuals as well as businesses. So I think there's a general heartburn about fees to begin with. I think many of those that are not paying anything now, that's natural for them to be anxious about paying them. I think that there are individuals that are currently paying, however, that also feel like there needs to be some equity, and that's one of the reasons we didn't move forward. They said, this is a non-starter for us until you address the exemptions. So we kind of pulled up the stakes and said, we're starting over, and we're going to tell the legislature we aren't going to move forward with the fee increase, and we're going to retool instead. So I think the other objections included, and while we haven't satisfied the answer, all of the concerns, this whole idea of give us more certainty. What would this project cost? And how much time do you think it would take to do this? And what tier would it fall in? And many of the questions that Representative Benz has asked, and to some degree we've been able to satisfy and give answers. And in some cases, there's still some unknowns. And we recognize that we'll have to work and tune as we get applications and do our best to make the best estimate based on the amount of work that will be required to review the certification application. Does that get it? Okay.
Great, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I have quite a bit of trouble with this fee schedule, and I look at the first 20 hours at $1,400. My simple arithmetic tells me that comes out to about $70 an hour. And furthermore, if I look at the difference of roughly 50 hours that you have between 20 and 75, it's 55, or between 75 and 125. It looks like the differences there as you move up each one of these gradients is on a ratio of about $70 an hour,
mm-hmm.
give or take some change. I don't know how I feel exactly about doing stuff on a per-hour basis. But I have real heartburn when we're kind of building in here at roughly a $70 an hour cost, which is what this assumedly is supposed to be recovering, and then putting it, as far as the consumer is concerned, into 50-hour blocks.
Increments. Mm-hmm.
For 22 hours worth of work on the part of the agency, it cost them $4,925. For 19 hours and 45 minutes, it cost them something in pennies less than $1,400.
Right.
I have difficulty with this type of rationale.
May I?
Of course, yes.
Chair Cannon, Representative Jensen. I agree that this is hard, and we wrestled with it as well. A natural resource specialist who has the expertise to take into consideration all these federal requirements that might be applicable, additional water quality requirements that need to be considered as part of the certification in order for us to make a scientifically credible decision about whether to waive or issue the certification costs money. And I don't say that lightly or in any way to be disrespectful. And when you factor in what, you know, benefits and what we pay our staff and the level of expertise we need to make, you know, to make scientifically certain decisions, it's expensive. I guess that's all I can say to that. And I don't, Christine, if you want to answer it or say any more.
Thanks.
Follow up.
Yeah, I recently had some mechanical work done on some equipment that I had. I guess just commenting that, of course, a lot of this type of work, it's an industry that works on a, you know, per-hour basis, and mm-hmm. most of it's, you know, in formula someplace in a book, so you know exactly what's going to, you know, the number of hours sure. that are supposed to take to do this. But if I go into you know, this particular shop and they tell me, well, it's going to take somewhere between 20 and 75 hours, so it's going to cost you $4,925. I'm going to be looking for a different shop. Now, we don't have the same option here in state government.
Right.
The option ends, you know, on this at these committees and with the chambers. But I just have to be real honest. It's very difficult for me to accept this type of fee schedule.
Thank you.
Is it the case that the previous, or I suppose the current right. fee schedule is based on the amount of fill that's removed under each of these operations?
Yes.
And is it also the case, and I don't know if you're the best to ask this, but the economic value associated with the activity is related to the amount of fill removed from the site?
Chair Cannon, I'm going to look to Christine, but I don't know. Those are not necessarily related. Mm. Sometimes they are, but not necessarily.
If that's true.
Okay. I suppose it might be obvious what my hypothesis is
yes.
about the previous fee, that it might have related in a way that this may not to the
right.
kind of economic, the size of the
right.
the operation economically, if
right.
not the size of your operation in reviewing the permit. So
right.
I think that's another dimension
right.
of this to
sure.
explore as we move forward. But thank you very much for your
yeah.
Testimony. One last question, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it sounds like we're not working this today, so there may
right.
we may be hearing from you again. We may
sure.
be talking about it again. Two things that would be helpful for me, at least,
yep.
in the interim. One is with relationship to Brother Jensen's question, is there a way to base this on a standard? I had a similar impression to him when I was in my aforementioned other classroom, and they talked to me about some computer science fees that we were paying, and it was about $250, $300 an hour, and that sounded like a good gig. So if there's a way to base it on a market standard, or at least that we're looking at a market standard when we do it, that might help us a little bit. And then second, we have a set of draft criteria when we're looking at fee increases. I don't know if those have been shared with you, but we can. I have a little copy. I can hand it to you,
yeah,
and you can. And any thoughts you have with
yep.
response to those, at least be helpful to me and maybe a few others.
Yep, happy to take it.
Thanks. Well, let's hear from some other folks. I hope you'll stick around.
Sure,
and maybe be around for questions if there are any. Joe Whitworth, Bob Willis, and Sue Marshall. Why don't all three of you, who have signed up, come up front, and we can go in whatever order you like.
Well, Sue, would you like to go first?
No, I'd like to go first.
Oh, great. Okay.
So polite.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, my name is Joe Whitworth. I am the director of Oregon Trout. And on behalf of our board of directors and more than 1,500 members around the state that are committed to restoring freshwater health, we are here in support of House Bill 2185 for a number of reasons. I also, as aside from being a member of the this advisory committee that began its work in December of 2007 to look at this fee review or these fee revisions. I also co-chair the water subcommittee of the Oregon Global Warming Commission with Phil Ward. And I do sit on the Agricultural Water Quality Committee for the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Have a very clear interest in water and the quality of water. And I think you can really get wrapped around your axle if you go down into fees, particularly if they're drafted in statute, which is, I think, a pretty heady thing that an agency charged to meet a pretty significant responsibility under the Federal Clean Water Act has to go to its legislature to be able to get some fees in place. I would submit that we have addressed our water quality concerns in the state backwards. If you have the regulating agency run to its those applicants, largely the applicants, and say, we have a federal responsibility under the Clean Water Act. We have responsibilities to you as applicants to pursue your fill removal permits. What do you guys think? My dad was a contractor, and I can tell you what he would have said. And it's not a terribly friendly audience. I was the only conservation interest on the advisory committee, and so I was kind of the downer in the discussion. But the fact is, 401 Section 401 under the Clean Water Act requires that the feds get a certification from the state entities within the where the project is going to be occurring that project will not impair water quality standards in that state. And that is a pretty big certification to be issuing. We currently do a pretty poor job of it. We have two staffers that are dedicated to a statewide program that runs about 100 permits in a year, permit applications a year. We have, and that, you know, the work ratio, you know, sort of the workload to staff ratio clearly does clog applications. It clearly does hurt the development or sort of impair the development of getting guidance out so that applicants can know where they're going, know what they're getting, what their monitoring requirements are like, what their applications are going to be requiring of them. But I think that those that say we shouldn't throw money at this problem because they're not getting their job done is a little bit like keeping oxygen away from an asthma patient because their lungs don't work so well. And I think that we have, in the state of Washington, I think they have 7 FTE dedicated to their statewide program. They have, and I think, a geomorphologist on staff as well. Meanwhile, we have not only 2 staff to run through the applications, we have 0 staff to engage in compliance monitoring after the fact and 0 staff to pursue enforcement in the instance where that hypothetical compliance monitoring would be out of compliance. And so for you, I think the question, though I think a number of the questions around the fees and how they're structured and the guidance that needs to be put in place should be shored up and get some metrics in place so the agency can come back and say, this is how we have spent the money. If the applicants today think that the DEQ doesn't get their job done well, I can say that if the federal agency, the EPA, who has devolved this responsibility to the state, if we do an inadequate job, preemption comes into play. They may take this program back. And in that case, the applicants are going to find a much worse setup. And so I would say, the inadequate staffing of this program, and honestly, most all of our water quality programs here, to the extent that we do not staff it adequately, we put the waters of the state at a pretty big risk because we really don't know what happens after that application goes out the door. But it also puts the actual implementation of the program and our ability to run that program as a state program as opposed to a federal program being run in our state. That's a pretty big burden that needs, or a pretty big concern, I would submit, for the legislature to consider as you go through and look at this bill. So again, we're in favor, and we would like you to be also.
Thanks, Joe. Sue or Bob?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Robert Willis. I'm Chief of the Environmental Resources Branch for Portland District Corps of Engineers. I was a member of the DEQ's Advisory Committee. And entering into Advisory Committee in terms of discussions with DEQ, we are a federal agency that does have to obtain 401 certification under the Clean Water Act for activities that we pursue. Mentioned to DEQ, there are two criteria for the federal government to pay fees. We can pay fees. They have to be fair and equitable. We can't be singled out because we're a federal agency. And secondly, they have to be for services rendered. We believe the current proposal does meet those criteria. Our principal concern, why we participated on the advisory committee, is timeliness of 401 certifications. DEQ has been grossly inadequately resourced to be able to provide these, and consequently, some of the times associated with 401 certification have significantly affected us and our ability to perform our work, and also have resulted in substantial additional costs for some of the dredging activities. So while many of the comments I was going to make have already been made, just would like to say that we do support DEQ's proposal and believe it meets the criteria that we need.
Thank you.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, my name is Sue Marshall. I'm here today representing several environmental organizations, Columbia River Keeper, Tualatin River Keepers, Willamette River Keeper, and Water Watch of Oregon, all very much concerned with water quality and quantity and all in support of HB 2185. I'd like to just say at the outset, we very much appreciate the work of DEQ and the advisory work group, even though none of the organizations I'm representing today were members of the work group. But we think that they came out with an equitable plan to address the shortfall in funds for this very important function. The 401 Water Quality Certification Program really is the intersection between development projects that intersect with our waters, and we don't want to see that any shortcuts in that. We are aware recently that DEQ waived their right to issue a 401 certification for Environmental Protection Agency's vessel general permit. The permit, this particular permit, also includes rules for ballast water, and we believe that or the state of Oregon's interest would have been served had DEQ been able to weigh in on that permit to just clarify a bit. There was a very short timeline, but the limited staff and the demands of other projects that are very large and very complex made it impossible for them to participate in this way. Ballast water, just as one example of why the 401 certification is important, poses a significant risk of invasive species in our waters. We believe that HB 2185 represents a fair and more equitable approach to the cost of the 401 program and the state's ability to protect our waters. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak in support of HB 2185.
Any questions for this set of Representative Barnard?
Thank you. Is it Joe?
Joe.
Thank you. When Oregon, when you were describing what happens if the federal government were to take this function back, you made some kind of vague statements about what might happen. Are there states where the federal government operates this program? And could you tell us what happens there that's different than what happens in Oregon?
The I didn't believe there are a couple of states. I can get back to you with which states are being operated by the feds. But the, you know, I don't have first-hand experience because we're right here in Oregon.
That's right.
But my, you know, this was one of the things that came up with the Ag Water Quality Advisory Committee on, you know, on the heels of Senate Bill 1010 and trying to make that work for landowners. And Senate Bill 1010 is sort of the non-point source bill that came over, I don't know how many sessions ago, but it was essentially, again, these are Clean Water Act mandates, and the way the federal apparatus is set up, some of them are, many of these are sort of given down to the states to the extent that they execute them adequately. And you know, the Clean Water Act is silent on the issue, but if they ever get to that place, they'll pull it back. And, you know, just giving, you know, if some of the applicants think that doing this dance with the state is difficult, I think it gets a little bit more onerous with a federal counterpart. So
let me ask some more specific questions,
yeah,
if I may. Federal government would take longer to issue permits? I think that's a yes or no.
I would say probably yes.
Okay, and would they also charge fees? And would those fees be equivalent to these fees or higher?
I do not know the answer to that question.
Okay.
And the reason I would say I don't know the answer to that question is, though you wouldn't be able to tell from current federal fiscal policy, but they have a little bit different revenue setup than the state of Oregon does.
Correct. Yeah.
And we do have to tag people in this state by fee because we don't have adequate, you know, revenues to do, I mean, many of the federal mandates that are stretching out in front of our state agencies are absolutely unattainable under the current staffing conditions.
Let me ask you a question in a different way, if I may. Is this some, I'm going to say it rhetorically first and let me see if I can get to it. Is this some kind of a federal boondoggle, or is this requirement something that citizens who are concerned about water quality ought to expect and demand that we would do, whether the federal government required us to do it or not?
I would not characterize this as a federal boondoggle. This state has its own water quality regulations that need to be met and are currently not really being met. In the state of Oregon, we have 30,000 stream miles that fail to support aquatic life, another 40,000 that are on the bubble, and we are trending the wrong direction right now. And I think that water in particular, if you look out the next few years, is going to become a much higher level of consciousness within the public's perception. This is a pretty basic thing. Whatever your interest in water, whether it's you know, fish or aesthetics or recreation or drinking or using for sewage, whatever, these are very serious mandates that are out in front of both the state agencies and the federal government under their purview of the Clean Water Act.
Thank you. If I may pursue this just a little bit further.
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. So, I mean, it sounds to me as though what you're saying is that whether there was a federal rule or not about this, we have state laws that would require similar kinds of things in terms of protecting water quality. And we ought to do it anyway for our own long-term self-interest.
I and our membership would agree to that statement.
And the way we choose to pay for this is to charge fees to those who want to become involved in the streams in the way, at least among other things, in the way those who have to apply for these particular permits do, having to do with filling wetlands, removal of fill, and so forth. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Gilliam.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I don't remember our guest's name from the Corps.
Robert Willis.
Robert, just quickly, as you look at what the Corps' got coming down the pike that would come under these fees, what's it going to do to the Corps' budget if this is adopted?
You have to remember the budget that the Corps gets, and primarily how we're going to be affected here is through navigation dredging. And so it will not be a significant cost for us in terms of navigation dredging. What is significant to us is that DEQ has been underfunded, they're inadequately staffed, and so that they're not able to get through the processes quickly enough. And with the stimulus package coming on board, too, that's one of our concerns, is to be able to get through all these environmental compliance processes in a timely manner.
Follow-up, Mr.
Chair? Yeah, follow-up, Professor. Okay.
I appreciate that, but I also appreciate the fact that, you know, with all due respect for what you do, and I have a lot of respect for what the Corps does, you're not going to feel the economic pinch on this. And we've got a lot of folks that will, so you don't have to respond to this, but I appreciate your testimony, too, and you look relatively unscathed for the only conservation person on the task force. But to your example, from our perspective, this is an important bill and this is an important agency, but, you know, the asthmatic air thing, we've got a lot of gasping patients. So just because we need more revenue, just because you think this is justified, doesn't create any money from the sector that's going to have to pay it. So that's a comment.
I just follow up with a comment of my own that goes back to what Mr. Willis said related to the effect that these permitting requirements may have on the federal government, in particular, its effort to create jobs via stimulus. And, you know, the more quickly we're able to process those applications, the more quickly we're able to help create jobs for Oregonians and others doing that work. It's something I hadn't thought of in this context. I'm glad you raise it. I expect it'll come up in other contexts as well as we review agency permitting requirements and fees, and I think it's certainly something to be mindful of. We want the work done sooner rather than later, and I really appreciate you bringing that point to our attention. If there are no other questions for this panel, we will go on and take any other testimony that folks are prepared to give. It looks like Mr. Chandler wants to spend more time with our committee. I can't imagine why, but we'll enjoy having him. And anyone else?
No, thank you. I appreciate it, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Chandler for the Oregon Home Builders Association, and frankly, Mr. Chairman, I'm a tad baffled as to why I want to do this myself. I'm here on 2185, and I was a member of the work group that gave rise to this bill. We're in an unfortunate position, and I talked to the staff at DEQ before I to tell them what I was going to have to do. It is with great reluctance and a fair amount of embarrassment that we're going to probably oppose the bill as written. And it's embarrassing only because we agreed to the concept. We're one of the groups, the home builders, by and large, were exempt from the fees under the old system. And discussions with the department realized that there was costs associated with even the projects of a driveway or something else that had a fill removal component, that some kind of a fee was fair. The problem is, of course, that since we made that, had those discussions, had the work group, and today, the real estate market tanked badly. It was tanking at the time. It has pretty well continued to do so. And my members simply can't afford to pay a fee at this point on anything, if there was anything being developed, which it probably isn't. And what I've talked to the agency about, and I would like to continue the conversations, is some way of addressing the fact that there are the economic realities facing us. I saw the testimony from Mr. Angstrom from OCAPA. I don't have his proxy, but I'd recommend it to you. We're kind of in a similar situation. Our world has changed. Our economies have changed. And a fee on top of what is a very losing proposition of real estate development right now, we'd like to have that extended, reduced, phased in, something, because at the moment it's simply a burden that we aren't prepared to bear.
Thank you, Mr. Chandler, for your testimony. Your members would be doing activities, you think, associated with the lower end of this fee structure, perhaps that first tier?
Mr. Chairman, that's absolutely correct, for
and
the most part.
Would it give you greater comfort if the bill, the fee, was designed in a way to reflect not just 0 through 20 at one number, but 0 through 5 estimated at 1, 5 through 10. If it was a more graduated, would that provide any additional comfort to your members, knowing that they might be at the low end even in terms of hours of that first year?
Mr. Chairman, that would certainly help. In fact, if we could get some money back out of the bill, we'd appreciate that. And I don't want to either to wordsmith it today. The conversation we had at the work group, I think is important to mention, was between the large fee payers who were subsidizing us, zero fee payers. Mm-hmm. And not surprisingly, they were a little cranky about that situation. We understand that, and we're not trying to get a free ride. But I talked to the ports before I came up here as well. So this is I'm sorry, we're going to have a problem. Let's see if we can't work it out. Something like you're suggesting may well be that path. I don't think my members and email traffic, when I circulated this here just recently, the email traffic I got back was, we understand the fee, we understand the problem, we can't. And that's different than we don't like it or we don't understand it, we think it's wrong. The agency did everything it was supposed to do, and I want to stress that. They involved the stakeholders, did a very good job of reaching out. This is no reflection on the work they did. It's simply a reflection of the times we're in. And something along the lines you're suggesting, Mr. Chairman, I'm certainly open and having continuing conversations with the agency and see if we can't move something forward that meets our needs as far as the economy or decline thereof and their need to have a viable program. I do want to respond, if I might, though, to a question you asked, Mr. Chairman, about the size of the fee versus the income potential. In some cases, that may be the case. In other cases, it may have nothing to do with it. A driveway across a wetland may not result in any bigger or better sale of a house. Mm-hmm. It simply is a driveway across a wetland, where you may have a bunch of fill, but no commensurate economic benefit necessarily.
Right. Thanks.
Questions?
Seeing none.
Thank you.
Thanks. We have a few letters to acknowledge for the record. It looks like three, one from the City of Portland, Environmental Services and Support. We have a letter from the Oregon Concrete and Aggregate Producers Association in opposition, and from the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, also in opposition. Members, I'll be interested in your thoughts offline on this bill if we're if we come back to it, what approach we might take, and we'll be talking to the agency about their possible next steps on it as well. Seeing no further folks step up to testify, I will go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2185 and close the House Committee on Environment and Water at 4.